An emperor was growing old and knew the time. It was time to choose his successor. He called all the young people in the kingdom together and said, "It's time for me to step down and choose the next emperor. I'm giving each one of you a seed today. I want you to plant the seed, water it, and bring it back 1 year from today with what you have grown from that one seed. I will then judge what you bring and choose who will be the next emperor." Ling received a seed like the others. He went home and excitedly told his mother the story. She helped him find a pot, planting soil. He planted the seed and carefully watered it. Every day he watered it and watched to see if it had grown. After about 3 weeks, some of the other youths began to talk about their seeds and the plants that were beginning to grow. Ling kept checking his seed, but nothing grew. 3, 4, 5 weeks went by, but nothing sprouted. By now, others were talking about their plants. Ling didn't have a plant, and he felt like a failure. 6 months went by. Still, nothing grew in Ling's pot. He believed he'd killed his seed. Everyone else had trees and tall plants, but he had nothing. He just kept hoping for his seed to grow. After a year, all the youths of the kingdom brought their plants to the emperor for his inspection. Ling told his mother he wasn't going to bring an empty pot, but his mother said, "You must be honest about what happened." Ling felt sick to his stomach, but he knew his mother was right. When Ling arrived, he was amazed at the variety of plants grown by the other youths. They were all shapes and sizes. Ling put his empty pot on the floor, and many of the others laughed at him. A few felt sorry for him and said, "Hey, nice try." When the emperor arrived, he greeted the young people and then surveyed the room. Ling tried to hide in the back. "My, what great plants, trees, and flowers you have grown," said the emperor. "Today, one of you will be appointed the next emperor." All of a sudden, the emperor spotted Ling at the back of the room with his empty pot. He ordered his guards to bring him to the front. Ling was terrified. "The emperor knows I'm a failure. Maybe he will have me killed." When Ling got to the front, the emperor asked his name. "My name is Ling," he replied. The emperor looked at Ling and then announced to the crowd, "Behold your new emperor. His name is Ling." Ling couldn't believe it. Ling couldn't even grow a seed. How could he be the new emperor? Then the emperor said, "1 year ago today, I gave everyone here a seed. I told you to take the seed, plant it, water it, and bring it back 1 year later. I gave you all boiled seeds, which would not grow. All of you except Ling have brought me trees, plants, and flowers. When you found that the seed would not grow, you substituted another seed for the one I gave you. Ling was the only one with the courage and honesty to bring me a pot with my seed in it. Therefore, he is the one who will be the new emperor." Now, maybe you've heard this story before, and they have Americanized versions with CEOs instead of emperors. But it does teach a lesson about honesty and courage. But there is another aspect of this that many people don't look at it from that viewpoint, is faithfulness or trustworthiness. You see, all of these young people were given a job to do, and only one did it. The others didn't. Now, maybe you've taken a test. It was high school when I had this test. And, you know, most of the tests you take, you just take the test, right? Normal. That's normal. Well, this one has a title of directions test. Only the test in high school, they didn't put that title at the top. Just said, "This is a test you're going to take," and take it. And this is a little bit different. You can find these on the internet, and they've modified them a little bit. And that you'll find out at the end what mine was like. But I will read this to you. Following exercise tests your ability to understand and carry out directions. Read all directions completely before writing anything down. At the end of this exercise, you will be given a score on how well you did. There are 15 items on here. I won't go through all of them, but I'll start. Number one, write your first name in the upper left corner of the page. Number two, write your last name in the upper right corner of the page. Number three, if your last name begins with a letter from A to M, circle your first name. Number four, if your last name begins with a letter from N to Z, circle your last name. Write today's date somewhere in the left column of this page. Write your birth date somewhere in the right column of this page. And now I'm going to skip ahead. So we're going to go down to number 14. Add the number under the title of this exercise to your score. 15. If there is any writing on the page before you have gotten here for the first time, give yourself a zero. Then go back and read the directions at the top of the page, telling you to read all directions completely before writing anything down. Now, the one I had at the very end, it said, you're reading everything through, and at the very end it says, just put your page down. You're finished. And so you see people busy doing every little step along the way, and they forgot they're supposed to read all the way through. They did not follow directions. There's another version of this, which is just really mean. If you're a teacher, they make people speak up in class and stand up and say things, and that's not a good thing. But it does teach you an important point about reading instructions and following directions. So do we do that with God's instructions or His commandments? Do we follow God's instructions carefully? What about duties we have in God's church? Still comes from God, even though it goes through another human being. Do we carefully finish assignments or follow through on duties? So what I want to talk about is faithfulness and why it's important. And the title of the sermon is Faithful in That Which Is Least. Now, the word faithful can sound like you're full of faith. And it comes from the Greek word, at least in the New Testament, the Greek word pistos, P-I-S-T-O-S. And it means trustworthy. And so it means someone can trust you to complete a task. In the Old Testament, the Hebrew word is aman. That also means trustworthy. And it's trustworthy that you would go to the right and do things in the right way. Sorry, all you left-handers. But actually, they got that word from, you know, being right-handed. And it involves a way of life as well. A faithful man is one that says, consider it done, and he follows through and finishes it when you give that person an assignment. I used to have an employee at work, and I'd give him an assignment, and he'd say, consider it done. And then he'd work on it for a little while longer, and then I'd come up and ask him, and he'd say, well, consider it almost done. And he would tend to finish it, but, you know, you had to kind of check back with him a little bit too much. Now, in addition to humans, there's someone else who's considered to be trustworthy. Let's go to Hebrews 11:11. Hebrews 11:11. It's talking about all these individuals in the 11th chapter of Hebrews with faith. And you remember the story of Abraham and Sarah and the baby becoming pregnant? And remember how she laughed? In verse 11 of chapter 11, it says, by faith, Sarah herself also received strength to conceive seed, and she bore a child when she was past the age, because she judged him, God, faithful, who had promised. So she knew that God was someone that you could trust, trustworthy, faithful. And why is he trustworthy? Because when he makes a promise, he follows through. So in another way of looking at it, he's a lot like what we mean by trustworthy with humans. And with humans, you give somebody an assignment, and they're going to do it. With God, when he says he's going to do something, he's going to do it. So you can go to a promise of God and know that he will do it. And so God is also someone that you could say is faithful. Let's go to Genesis 12 and verse 1. Genesis 12 for verse 1. An individual that is the father of the faithful. Genesis 12:1. It says, now the Eternal said to Abram, get out of your country, from your kindred, your family, and from your father's house, to a land that I'm going to show you. So he didn't even know where he was going. Just said, leave. And I will make you a great nation. I will bless you and make your name great. And you shall be a blessing. I will bless those who bless you. I will curse him who curses you, and in you all the families of the earth will be blessed. So right up front, God says, do this, and you're going to have all these promises. I'll follow through on these promises. And Abram departed as God had said to him. He didn't make excuses. He didn't say, those people are strange. Do I have to leave my family and friends? I've got a nice cell phone package. I'm afraid to go to a foreign country. I don't speak the language very well. It's hard work to move. There are no 5-star hotels on the way. And of course, chances are good he was riding on a camel. And he probably said, he didn't say, I have to ride this camel for hundreds of miles and camp out. Have you ever ridden on a camel? It's a different experience than a horse. How many of you have ridden on horses? Oh, not all of you. I thought it would be 100%. Okay. A horse, when you ride a horse, what does it do? It goes up and down, up and down, up and down, up and down. That's not what a camel does. Camel walks very smoothly, but side to side, side to side, side to side. So you're on top of this camel, you're twice as high as a horse off the ground, and you're swaying back and forth and back and forth. So if you're sick to your stomach, it's not a good idea to be on a camel. But Abram probably rode a camel. He didn't say, don't you have a 4-wheel drive with air conditioning? And, you know, if they'd had the technology back then, you could have taken a 4-wheel drive vehicle across the desert, even without a road. It's a little strange driving one, but, you know, it goes through the desert. Abram made no excuses. He just did it. He did what God said. Another individual was faithful. Let's go to Hebrews 3. Because you have a lot of summaries of individuals in the book of Hebrews. Hebrews 3 and verse 1. Therefore, holy brethren, partakers of the heavenly calling, consider the apostle and high priest of our confession, Christ Jesus, who was faithful to him who appointed him, as Moses was faithful in all his house. What house is it talking about? For this one has been counted worthy of more glory than Moses, speaking of Jesus Christ, inasmuch as he who built the house has more honor than the house. For every house is built by someone, but he who built all things is God. In other words, he who created all things is God. And Moses indeed was faithful in all his house as a servant for a testimony of those things which would be spoken afterward. But Christ as a son over his own house, whose house we are, if we hold fast the confidence and the rejoicing of the hope firm to the end. So it's talking about the church. Jesus Christ is in charge of the church. That's the house that he's in charge of. So, when it's talking about a house, it's for Moses, it's talking about the house of Israel. That's the house he was in charge of. And he was faithful with Israel. Think of all that time going across the wilderness, 40 years, traveling through the wilderness, dealing with all those Israelites. And chances are pretty good it was probably as many as 3 million people. He was faithful. He only made one mistake that entire time. And so he was trustworthy. God trusted in him, and he followed through. He had a big responsibility. Now, when it comes to Abraham, there was something additional that God had to trust Abraham to do. another area of responsibility besides just going from one place to another. And that is found in Genesis 18, verse 19. Genesis 18, verse 19. Let's go there. For I have known him, speaking of Abraham, in order that he may command his children and his household. So not just his children, but servants, everyone. After him, that they keep the way of the Eternal to do righteousness and justice, that the Lord may bring to Abraham what he has spoken to him. So God needed to have Abraham teach his children because the promise is going through that line. And he could not continue that promise down through Abraham, down to the son and the grandson, unless they were taught the right way of living. And so God says he knew that he was going to teach. He was faithful to teach. Command his children and his household. Now, if you go to the book of Titus, we turn way back to the other side of the Bible, right after Timothy. And by the way, we used to have he was a kid at the time named Timothy Titus. Good memory thing for the order of the Bible. So let's go to Titus. And then I've got to stop talking. Titus 1, verse 6. So these are qualifications for an elder, but it applies to anybody in the church. If a man is blameless, the husband of one wife, so all of you with three wives, forget it, having faithful children, not accused of dissipation or insubordination. So it's talking about having faithful, trustworthy children. So you're teaching your children. And so when it's talking about dissipation, and you look at these different words, that, you know, the old King James had different words in English, but it's sort of like saying, you know, he's not a party animal. These kids are not party animals. And of course, insubordination, you would understand pretty clearly, they obey the parents. And so this is something that's important to God, because we got to pass on the values to the next generation. And God wants to see us doing that. And sometimes it's hard because not all children are the same. Some are more difficult than others, but you still have to teach them. And God expects us to teach our children to do what's right. Now let's go through a couple of examples of unfaithfulness, because you can learn a lot from that. The biggest one that you think of first, and you should think of first in being unfaithful, is Lucifer. Lucifer had an assignment. He was in charge of the earth with one third of the angels. And he was to prepare the earth for human beings. And he came to the earth, and we don't know exactly how long he was on the earth before everything happened. But he started looking at his assignment as something that was little, something least in his eyes. And he thought, I need a bigger assignment. I should be in charge of the whole universe, like God. And of course, he rebelled against God. And so he was unfaithful in his assignment. He was not trustworthy. And God had to endure that. Not an easy thing to do. And so God doesn't want to have to go through that again with somebody who's spirit. Let's go to 1 Samuel 15, where we have an example of somebody who became unfaithful. 1 Samuel 15 and verse 1. Samuel also said to Saul, the Eternal sent me to anoint you king over his people, over Israel. Now therefore, heed the voice of the words of the Lord. Thus says the Lord of hosts, I will punish what Amalek did to Israel, how he laid wait for him on the way when he came up from Egypt. Now go and attack Amalek and utterly destroy all that they have and do not spare them, but kill both man, woman, infant and nursing child, ox and sheep, camel and donkey. That was his assignment. So kill every living thing. So Saul gathered the people together, numbered them in Telaim, 200,000 foot soldiers and 10,000 men of Judah. Now, I don't know why they mentioned 10,000 men of Judah unless they rode on animals like horses or something. Saul came to a city of Amalek and lay in wait in the valley. And then he told the Kenites to depart because they showed kindness to Israel. So the Kenites departed from the Amalekites, and Saul attacked the Amalekites from Havilah all the way to Shur, which is east of Egypt. He also took Agag, king of the Amalekites, alive, but destroyed all of the people with the edge of the sword. But Saul and the people spared Agag and the best of the sheep, the oxen, the fatlings, the lambs, and all that was good. And they were unwilling to utterly destroy them, but everything despised they killed, that they utterly destroyed. Now the word of the Eternal came to Samuel, saying, I greatly regret that I set up Saul as king, for he has turned back from following me and not performed my commandments. So God calls that a commandment, what he gave as an assignment to Saul. He did not perform it. And it grieved Samuel, and he cried out to the Lord all night. So Samuel rises early in the morning to meet Saul, and somebody told Samuel, saying, Saul went to Carmel, and he set up a monument for himself. Why would you do that if you were humble? So things appear to be going to his head with his success. And now he was down in Gilgal. Verse 13, Samuel went to Saul, and Saul said to him, Blessed are you of the Eternal. I have performed the commandment of the Lord. So in his mind, he thought he did the job. But Samuel said, What then is this bleating of the sheep in my ears, and the lowing of the oxen which I hear? And Saul said, They brought them from the Amalekites, and they spared the best of the sheep and the oxen to sacrifice to the Lord your God. And the rest we utterly destroyed. Samuel said to Saul, Be quiet, and I will tell you what the Lord said to me last night. He said, Speak on. So Samuel said, When you were little in your own eyes, weren't you the head of the tribes of Israel? And did not the Eternal anoint you king over Israel? Now the Lord sent you on a mission and said, Go and utterly destroy the sinners, the Amalekites, and fight against them until they are consumed. And that was his mission. He didn't complete his mission. Remember Mission Impossible? They would get an assignment. That was his mission. If you choose to follow this assignment, this mission. Why then did you not obey the voice of the Eternal? Why did you swoop down on the spoil and do evil in the sight of the Lord? And Saul said to Samuel, But I have obeyed the voice of the Lord and gone on the mission on which the Lord sent me. And brought back Agag, king of Amalek. I have utterly destroyed the Amalekites, but the people took of the plunder sheep and oxen, and the best of the things that should have utterly been destroyed. So now he's admitting that they should have been destroyed. And they saved them to sacrifice to the Lord your God. Notice he says, Lord your God, in Gilgal. And then Samuel said, Has the Lord as great delight in burnt offerings and sacrifices as in obeying the voice of the Lord? Behold, to obey is better than sacrifice, and to heed than the fat of rams. Rebellion is as the sin of witchcraft, and stubbornness as iniquity and idolatry. Because you have rejected the word of the Lord, he also has rejected you from being king. God couldn't trust Saul anymore. He proved himself untrustworthy. He wanted to do things his own way. He was given a mission, and he didn't complete it. He only partially completed it. And so, he had to be replaced. That's what you do when you can't trust somebody. You have to replace them with somebody that you can trust. And that's where King David came in. Let's go to 1 Kings 13. 1 Kings 13, we have an example of a man of God. That's what they call him in the scriptures. 1 Kings 13, verse 1. Behold, a man of God went from Judah to Bethel by the word of the Eternal. And Jeroboam stood by the altar to burn incense. So Jeroboam's the king. He's not supposed to be burning incense. And then he cried out against the altar. This is the man of God. By the word of the Eternal, and said, O altar, altar, thus says the Eternal, behold, a child, Josiah by name, shall be born to the house of David. And on you he shall sacrifice the priests of the high places who burn incense on you, and men's bones shall be burned on you. And he gave a sign the same day, saying, this is the sign which the Lord has spoken. Surely the altar shall split apart, and the ashes on it shall be poured out. So it came to pass, King Jeroboam heard the saying of the man of God, who cried out against the altar, and he stretched out his hand from the altar, saying, arrest him. And then look at what happens to his hand. Stretches out his hand, and his hand withers. So he couldn't pull it back to himself. And then the altar was split apart. Ashes poured out, according to the sign of the man of God. And then, of course, King Jeroboam is a little scared there. You know, and you would be too if your hand had withered. So the king answered and said to the man of God, please entreat the favor of the Eternal your God, and pray for me, that my hand may be restored to me. So the man of God entreated the Eternal, and the king's hand was restored to him, and became as it was before. So God had mercy on him. And then the king said to the man of God, come home with me, refresh yourself, and I will give you a reward. But the man of God said to the king, if you were to give me half your house, I would not go in with you, nor eat bread or drink water in this place. And here's the reason why, verse 9. For so it was commanded me by the word of the Lord, saying, you shall not eat bread, nor drink water, nor return by the same way you came. That was part of his assignment. Of course, he also had to say those words that he already said. But he was not to eat bread, drink water, or return the same way he came, but he was to go home still without doing any of those things. So far, so good. So he went another way, did not return by the way he came, back to Bethel. And then an old prophet dwelt in Bethel, and his sons came and told him all about what this man of God had done. And their father said to them in verse 12, which way did he go? Because his sons had seen which way he went. And he said to his sons, verse 13, saddle the donkey for me. They saddled the donkey, and he rode on it. And he found the man of God sitting under an oak. Verse 14. And he said to him, are you the man of God who came from Judah? And he said, I am. And then he said to him, come home with me and eat bread. So this prophet is being tested. This man of God is being tested very carefully. And he said, I cannot return with you nor go in with you. Neither can I eat bread nor drink water with you in this place. So far, so good. For I have been told by the word of the Lord, you shall not eat bread, drink water, and return by the way you came. Verse 18. He said to him, I too am a prophet, as you are. And an angel spoke to me by the word of the Lord, saying, bring him back with you to your house, that he may eat bread and drink water. But he lied to him, so a false prophet. So this man was lying to him to get him to do something that God told him not to do. And then he gave in. Verse 19. He went back with him, ate bread in his house, and drank water. And as they sat at the table, the word of the Lord came to the prophet who brought him back, the old man. And he cried out to the man of God who came from Judah, saying, thus says the Lord, because you have disobeyed the word of the Lord and have not kept the commandment which the Lord your God commanded you, but you came back, ate bread, drank water in the place which the Lord told you not to eat bread and drink water, your corpse shall not come to the tomb of your fathers. And then after he ate and drank, he saddled a donkey. And when he was gone, a lion met him on the road, killed him, and his corpse was thrown on the road, and the donkey stood by it, and a lion also. So here this man, everything was going great. He was obeying what God said, but he was being deceived by somebody who was lying to him. So you have to be careful who you listen to. Somebody can deceive you and say they're a man of God. And he did not follow his assignment. He was so close, but he gave in when another man said he was the man of God. So he became untrustworthy, and look how quickly God dealt with him. So God expects us to complete our assignments, even if someone else tries to distract us. And that could be something even small that you have to do today. Now, there's 2 points I want to make about becoming faithful or becoming more faithful and trustworthy. The first major point, and most of my time will be spent on this, is make your current responsibilities important. And the way you do this is think about the reward. Think about the fact that what you're doing now relates to your reward in the kingdom. Let's go to Matthew 25. We've got 3 parables to go through. Matthew 25 and verse 14. So this is the parable of the talents. For the kingdom of heaven is like a man traveling to a far country. He calls his servants, delivers his goods to them. To one he gave 5 talents, to another 2, and another 1. To each according to his own ability, and then he went on his journey. So he who had received the 5 talents went and traded with them and made another 5. Likewise, he who had received 2 gained 2 more. But he who had received 1 went and dug in the ground and hid his Lord's money. So after a long time, the Lord of those servants came and settled accounts with them. So he who had received 5 talents came and brought 5 talents additional, saying, Lord, you delivered to me 5. Look, I've gained 5 more besides them. His Lord said to him, well done, good and faithful servant. So not only was he called good, he was called faithful. He had done what his assignment was, to trade and gain more. And so he was called a faithful servant. He was trustworthy. You are faithful over a few things. I will make you ruler over many things. Enter into the joy of your Lord. He also who had received 2 came and said, Lord, you delivered to me 2, but gained 2 more. His Lord said to him, well done, good and faithful servant. You've been faithful over a few things. I'm going to make you ruler over many things. Enter into the joy of your Lord. And of course, then you hear the rest of this part where it's talking about the one that only had 1 talent. And of course, he did not do so well. So the principle here is what you do with what you have now, the responsibilities you have now, is how God is going to judge you. You know, he's not expecting you to have some greater responsibility now. You have to prove yourself with what you are doing now. Then you'll get a promotion. Your promotion will be in the kingdom, or it may be in this life. And then you'll have more work to do. That's how God works. And in most places of employment, if you're a good worker, the best workers get more work and responsibility because they've proven themselves that they're faithful and trustworthy. They complete their assignments. So if you're not getting more work, you might want to ask yourself why. But it tends to happen. All the best employees keep getting piles of work added onto them, more and more and more. And that's the way God works. All these parables work the same way. Let's go to Luke 16. Luke 16, verse 1. Parable of the unjust steward. Now, this is teaching a little bit different example, but we'll continue on to the end. He also said to his disciples, there was a certain rich man who had a steward, and an accusation was brought to him that this man was wasting his goods. So he called him and said to him, what is this I hear about you? Give an account of your stewardship, for you can no longer be steward. He's going to lose his job. Then the steward said within himself, what shall I do? For my master's taken the stewardship away. I can't dig ditches. I'm ashamed to beg. I can't go on unemployment benefits. They didn't have any back then. I have resolved what to do when I'm put out of the stewardship. So what does he do? He calls every one of the master's debtors to him and said to the first, how much do you owe my master? He said, 100 measures of oil. So he said to him, take your bill, sit down quickly and write 50. He cut out 50% of the debt. That guy's going to be pretty grateful to him. And then he found another. He says, how much do you owe? 100 measures of wheat. He said, write 80. Not as good a deal as the first guy. 20% off. And so the master commended the unjust steward because he dealt shrewdly. Verse 10, let's go to the end. It says, he who is faithful in what is least is faithful also in much. And he who is unjust in what is least is unjust also in much. So when it talks about least, most of the time it's talking about how you view the assignment. If it's a small assignment, you have to still be faithful in it because God is going to take that assignment and use that to judge you by. God's watching you. And that's how the only way he's going to know how you're going to do in God's kingdom. Let's go to Luke 19. Turn over a couple pages. Luke 19, verse 11. It's amazing, you know, no time has gone by at all according to that clock. Still early in the morning, or it's nighttime. And according to that clock, probably no time has gone by either, right? 19:11. Now, this is the parable of the minas, as it says in the New King James. As they heard these things, he spoke another parable because it was near Jerusalem. And they thought the kingdom of God would appear immediately. So a certain nobleman went into a far country to receive for himself a kingdom and return. And he called 10 of his servants, delivered to them 10 minas, and said to them, do business till I come. But his citizens hated him, sent a delegation after him, saying, we'll not have this man reign over us. So it was when he returned, having received the kingdom, this is talking about Jesus Christ, he then commanded these servants, to whom he had given the money, to be called to him, that he might know how much every man had gained by trading. Then came the first, saying, Master, your mina has earned 10 minas. And he said to him, well done, good servant. Because you were faithful in a very little, have authority over 10 cities. Once again, you're trustworthy, you're faithful, you can be trusted in your first assignment. You are now going to get a promotion. 10 cities. That's how God works, and that's how many supervisors would work if they're good supervisors. The second came, saying, Master, your mina has earned 5 minas. Likewise, he said, you should also be over 5 cities. And then, of course, the guy with the one that only didn't produce anything, he hid it away in a handkerchief, for I feared you. Verse 24, and he said to those who stood by, take the mina from him, the one with the one, and give it to him who has 10. See the principle? You do well, you get more work. You also get rewards, but it's more work. But they said to him, Master, he has 10 minas. That's not fair. But I said to you that to everyone who has will be given, and from him who does not have, even what he has will be taken away from him. So if you're not faithful, God's not going to give you rewards. You're not going to be in charge of cities if he can't trust you with something small. Reminds me of a student assistant we had one time working for free, volunteer. They came in, and you'd think they're trying to make a good impression, right? Because they're not getting paid. What are they going to gain? They didn't make a good impression. I thought, why are they even here? What's the point? You know, if you make a good impression, then you might get hired later on. You know, someone told you they were going to give you $1 million if you did a certain task. You'd probably make that task a high priority. It wouldn't be hard to connect the dots. I do this. Here's the result, $1 million. Maybe I can do that. People do a lot of things when they enter contests and do some amazing things to win prizes. There are reality shows where you win money or you win a guy or a girl. But God is richer than Bill Gates or anybody else on this earth. Do we connect the dots between being faithful now and our reward in the kingdom of God? Sometimes it's hard to visualize, but there have been many who have visualized that reward. Now, I remember it's probably 20, 30 years ago, hearing a man say, I will just be thankful to be a gatekeeper in the kingdom of God. The problem is, that job's already taken. The gatekeepers are going to be the physical Levites in Jerusalem, and they're going to be gatekeepers at the temple. So you won't be a gatekeeper. But I had to try to understand why he said that. And the only thing I could think of is, maybe it's because he thought that was the default reward. If I just do the minimum, I'll at least be a gatekeeper. He didn't want to put out the effort to have a better reward. So raise your sights on your reward. Look at what happened to Abraham. So the parables talk about the reward of ruling over 10 cities. Don't be afraid to do something like that. Abraham's reward was spelled out right up front. God gave him a task, and he told him his reward. I'm going to make you a great nation. I will bless you and make your name great. You shall be a blessing. I will bless those who bless you. I will curse him who curses you. And in you, all the families of the earth will be blessed. That's a pretty big reward right up front. Let's go to Matthew 19, where we see a reward being brought out for the disciples. At the time, they were disciples. Matthew 19 and verse 27. Then Peter answered, always Peter talking, and said to him, see, we have left all and followed you. Therefore, what shall we have? He wanted to know what the reward was. So Jesus said to them, assuredly I say to you that in the regeneration, when the Son of Man sits on the throne of his glory, you who have followed me will also sit on 12 thrones, judging the 12 tribes of Israel. That's their reward. Nice reward. They're each going to have a tribe of Israel to judge. And everyone who has left houses or brothers or sisters, or father, or mother, or wife, or children, or lands, for my name's sake, shall receive 100-fold and inherit everlasting life and eternal life. So that's not just talking about the disciples or the apostles. That's talking about everybody in the church that follows. Everyone who has left houses or brothers, you sacrificed something in the church. You've lost family members. They won't talk to you again, because you're in the church. Some cases you had to give up jobs. You gave up something, but you're going to be rewarded, and God will take care of that reward. And so the disciples learned that they were going to be, under David, in charge of one tribe apiece over the tribes of Israel. Let's go to Hebrews 11 and verse 24. Hebrews 11. It says, by faith Moses, when he became of age, refused to be called the son of Pharaoh's daughter, choosing rather to suffer affliction with the people of God than to enjoy the passing pleasures of sin. He had a pretty nice life in the royal family of Egypt. Esteeming the reproach of Christ greater riches than the treasures in Egypt, for he looked to the reward. So he knew there was a reward, and he was looking beyond the present life on this earth to the reward. And that was motivating him. So we need to look at that reward that we are going to receive. It may not be as specific as I'm in charge of one tribe of Israel, but it's a pretty good reward. We will have positions in authority. Let's go to verse 13, same chapter. These all died in faith, not having received the promises, but having seen them afar off in the distance, in the future. They were assured of them. So they were sure they're going to have this reward, the promise. And they embraced them and confessed that they were strangers and pilgrims on the earth. So they embraced the reward, the promise. And they said, yeah, this is a temporary life, so I'm just like a stranger and a pilgrim. They looked ahead to the future. Life is short when you're physical. Eternity is a long time compared to our present life on this earth. And they could visualize that reward. And they embraced the reward. And that got them through a lot of trials. The last point I want to make, second point, is not as big as the first, but don't make excuses. Let's go to Proverbs 22:13. Proverbs 22:13. The slothful man says, you know, our daughter, this is her favorite animal, sloth. Real slow animals. He could fall asleep just watching them, waiting for them to move. Slothful man says, there is a lion outside. I shall be slain in the streets. That was his excuse for not going out and working. He had to go outside to work. Lion's not going to go inside the house. And he was going to go outside and he thought, well, I'm going to get slain by a lion. Now, the odds are pretty good the lion's not going to be out there in the daytime because they hunt at night. We actually had a lion on our property a couple of years ago, and it came out in the middle of the night. Made its, I call it a growl. It's kind of a combination sound, and I thought, I don't need to be outside. So I just went back inside. But you're probably not going to see them in the daytime. So this man was making this excuse, and he was probably making many, many other excuses. My favorite excuse in the wintertime is in the morning when it's cold. It's too cold outside. But I'm from Southern California, so these are all excuses. And if you keep making excuses, nothing ever gets done. In the church, because we're a body, we have to work together. We have certain tasks to do. We're not paid to do them. Do we do them? Do we show up on time when we're supposed to be somewhere? Do we finish the job that we volunteer for? Or do we just make excuses? That's just the way I am. I can't change my personality. I'm a free spirit. But it's not your personality, it's your character. Or I can't be tied down. Or I'm too tired. There are many excuses we can come up with. You know, back 10 years ago or so, back when the state of California had a little more money, we actually hired student assistants. And one time we had about 6 or 7 student assistants and maybe 3 positions. And, you know, you start going through, these student assistants were sophomores to seniors. We didn't hire freshmen. And there are generally engineering majors. And we had to hire some. They got paid fairly well. And one of the individuals stood out above the rest because they had similar educations. And the reason he stood out was he was a manager at an auto parts store. What does that have to do with engineering? And we ended up hiring him as one of the 3. The reason why is he had already proven himself as a manager. You see, you have to be responsible, trustworthy, faithful as a manager. You deal with money. You can't steal money. You're a supervisor. You have to deal with people. That's not an easy thing to do. And you have to close up at the end of the day, or you have to open up in the morning if you get there in the morning. And so because he proved himself, it was kind of like a no-brainer. He had the character to hire him. And, of course, his level of education was similar to the rest of them. And so we ended up hiring him, and he's now, you know, he's permanently there at Caltrans as an engineer. Because he was trustworthy. He proved it up front. Now, we have many different responsibilities in this life. If you're married and you have a family, you have your wife, husband, or whoever, and your children. If you're not married, you have a job. And in the church, we have different duties. So when we're given a task, do we do them and complete the task? Lucifer was given that assignment. He was in charge of the earth. He failed in his assignment. And God had to endure the unfaithfulness of Lucifer. He doesn't want it anymore. So God is testing us now to see if we're qualified to be over cities and people in the millennium. It's based upon how we do now with our current responsibilities. Lucifer failed. Abraham was an example of someone who, when God gave him a task, said, "Consider it done." And he did it. Jesus Christ was given a job. A job to do by the Father. He had to live a sinless life for 33 and a half years and choose 12 disciples, take care of these disciples to the end, and prepare them to be apostles. And Jesus Christ, at the end of his life, said, "It is finished," because he had completed his assignment. So the example brought out in the parables, especially in Luke, is being faithful in that which is least. And God's reward was tied in with two words, being good and faithful. So are we faithful in that which is least? Because it has a direct impact on our reward in the kingdom.